Okay, you ready?
You're listening to Design Yourself, a podcast to help you figure out what it is that you want and then make it happen. I'm Sharon Lepofsky. Don't you forget, this is my life and it's gonna
be good. Don't you know? Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 53 of Design Yourself. I'm your host, Sharon, and today I have the extraordinary pleasure of introducing you all to a very special person in my life and in the world, my youngest sister, Julia. Julia is an artist and a teacher and an all-around lovely, happy person. She graduated from MICA, Maryland Institute College of Art, back in 2015. And in today's interview, we explore kind of what have those steps been like as she has stepped in the last couple of years out into the workforce and what that has been like. You know, she is a person who, you know, she did not land in her dream job right away. Who does? But she did, as you'll hear, pay attention to the clues that were happening around her and really look, as she continues to do today, to keep going after what it is that she wanted. And she eventually landed herself in a role that she's in, continues to do today, that is so perfectly her, working as the education coordinator at Visionaries and Voices, which is a nonprofit visionary art studio with an education arm in Cincinnati, Ohio. So very cool work that she's doing, and you'll kind of see how she wended her way into that. And Julia is also a person who, you know, she's not doing a single thing. She's like, I think so many of us today, has a portfolio of things that she's working on. So she continues to make art, including a line of necklaces called Cladies. I will, in fact, be featuring a limited edition of these said Cladies on the Point Road Shop later this summer. Julia also just launched with a dear high school friend, Buddies, which is a floral arranging creative enterprise where they've already started doing weddings to great success. So she's just somebody who's out there doing many different things. And I am sure you will, like me, be very inspired by her. Julia is over a decade younger than me. But as you'll see today, you know, the wisdom that she's got really far exceeds her years. In fact, I remember when I was reading through her college essay, as she had requested and my mother had requested many moons ago. And I don't even remember the content of what she said. I think maybe red lipstick played a role, although that could have been a different iteration. What I do remember is the feeling I had at the end of reading it, which was, holy cow, how did this sister of mine become so darn smart? Where did she get this, you know, get this kind of insight as an 18-year-old? And I'm not going to lie, I also thought, wow, if only I had been able to write like that when I was 18, that would have been really amazing. So anyway, all this to say, just as I was wowed and awed by her all those years ago, I'm excited for you all to be wowed and awed by her today. Before we jump into the show, remember that you can head over to pointroadstudios.com to see this week's original cover art by John Flannery of Cryptogram, and the show notes with all the links, tools, books, resources, everything that is referenced in today's episode. The cover art features a photo of me and the beautiful Julia. And I've put in the show notes a few more fun pictures of she and I throughout the years because, you know, as sisters, you have things like photos together. So anyway, without further ado, I say let us dive in to today's show. Julia, I'm so pumped to have you on the podcast today. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Yeah. And here, for everyone listening, is actually Julia's home studio, which has a super amazing fireplace with what did you call that? Like a vignette painted on it?
Yes, a hand-painted vignette.
Yeah, so yes, a hand-painted vignette.
It is good to be here. I did say that.
Yeah. So it's nice to be in this space and
yeah, get the Julia vibe. We've got lots of your artwork around, a really giant Uber poster calendar, which feels to me like...
Yeah, it's a centered calendar, which is like how I feel if I'm going to manage time, like I need it to be.
It's a what count? A what?
A stendix. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong and you're going to have to edit this out.
But definitely not editing it out.
It's a giant poster.
It's a giant poster.
It's a giant calendar. But
yeah, it's like you could...
If you need any indication of
if it was if you turned it and it became a table, you could easily fit like...
That's a four person.
I was going to say, it's a four top that you could get six people around if you didn't mind cozying up.
Mm-hmm. And that, for everyone listening, is what I need to manage my time.
A giant poster in your face of a six top, four to six top of calendar.
Yeah, we need like a medium-sized family to be able to eat around it.
I'm going to have to take your picture in front of it before I leave today to put in the show notes so people can understand, possibly with you looking at a watch. Making it happen. So, yeah, thanks for inviting me into your space. I'll probably say this in the intro too, but we're sisters, so it's fun to be here with a sister. It's like girl talk time.
And I do partially feel like it's a trick because of that. Like, you've been waiting all these years. Let me sit you down.
And ask you lots of questions.
Yeah.
So my first question for the podcast is, did you steal my blue jeans that I know?
Truth comes out.
I have a lot of questions for you.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was worried about.
Well, since your boyfriend is babysitting my infant son, I feel like we're all good here.
Yeah, we've got some insurance.
Exactly. No, but really what I wanted to talk with you about is to really get your perspective on setting out into work and... and just hear from the perspective of someone who's almost on the eve of her 24th birthday. Like you and I are 12 years apart in age. Mm-hmm. And, while I fully think of you as a sister, and hopefully you don't think of me as a mother, but one of the things that, Colin, my husband, and I often, what we'll often talk about is, this vested interest that we feel like we have in your success from the perspective of by the time you are the seven kids in our family. So the youngest of the seven siblings. And, by that point in time, mom and dad outsourced your college application process to me.
To Team Lepofsky.
Yes, Team Lepofsky, yes. Which I was spearheading. I was the committee captain.
Because at the time that I was graduating high school was the time that Sharon... You were investigating becoming a leadership coach, and I was like, your experience.
That's right. And I had been working in higher education doing consulting, so I'd been inside all these universities, and having traveled out to Ohio, gone to your portfolio days at in Cincinnati and things like that, you actually were like a dream. We'll talk about that later, what that was like. But I always feel like I went through that process with you, and so that gave me like this different lens into your art school experience when you were going through that. And
anyway, oh, absolutely. So, I don't think of you as a mother, but I do think of you as the person who helped nudge me into my voice, into my world.
Well, that's very generous of you.
You got a long way to go, though.
Yes. What you're saying is at the end of this podcast, we need to have your voice found.
Yeah. That's okay.
Great.
Challenge accepted. I will now be interviewing you from here on.
Perfect.
About your qualifications to find my voice.
Edit that part out. No, I'm just kidding. Where I wanted to start is, would you just describe for listeners what it is that you're currently doing in terms of work?
So I am the education coordinator at Visionaries and Voices in Cincinnati. So edu- So Visionaries and Voices is a nonprofit art studio that supports adult artists with developmental disabilities. And so my job is to work with the 30 or so artists out of our 120 plus artists that attend our two studios, to work with those 30 artists who have gone through the Teaching Artist Program, which is about a 6-month program where you learn everything from public speaking, lesson planning, you know, you talk about your portfolio, some more professional development, you do student teaching in a classroom, you have a mentor along the way. And when you graduate from that, you get paid teaching opportunities around the city in community centers and local schools. So my job is to prepare artists for those classes after they've graduated, you know, make them some saucy PowerPoints about with examples of their work and how to make work that is inspired by them through these lessons that they prepared in the Teaching Artist Program. So I prepare all of our supplies, I prep them for class, I pick them up, we go to the school, we teach the class, I drive them home, I unpack the supplies. So we're like a strange little school on the go.
Love that.
Yeah.
And how did you find yourself in a job like this? Was this like, you're like, what I want is a job doing that, or?
So it's funny. I feel like nothing ever, like I've never been someone who's like, I know exactly what I want to do. I've just been kind of like picking up little clues as I go. And now I'm at a point where like all of those clues are making sense. And I'm like, oh, I'm doing it. Like I'm doing that thing that I wanted to do 5 years ago, but I had no idea what it was called or what it is. Because right, like I just described what I do and there's no way I could have dreamt up this job from like a book handed to me by a guidance counselor.
Right.
So what was the question?
No. So yeah. How did you find yourself in that? So you, what you just said, so you were picking up all these clues, like what were the clues?
It's
like a game.
It is. It's so weird. And it goes like way far back. So like, should I start from the beginning or should I like start where I am and like work my way back?
I think you choose your own entry point.
Okay.
I will trust it.
So I was
right
born.
Yay. I remember that.
Yeah. No. So really it started like the summer before I graduated or no, the summer before my junior year.
Of high school or college?
Of college. So the summer before my junior year at MICA.
And we tell people what that's Maryland. I always get this wrong. Maryland Institute.
The summer before my junior year at the Maryland Institute College of Art in Baltimore, Maryland.
MICA.
MICA, for short. My sister Sharon.
That's me.
Calls me about a designer that she's contacted, John Flannery of Cryptogram. And tells me I'm the best sister ever because I think I just found you an internship and maybe a boyfriend. He sounds kind of cute on the phone. And thus began like a weird kismet like path of my life because I did intern for John. We did start dating. We are currently dating now, like close to 4 years later. But the last project, I bring that up because the last project I worked on as an intern for John was in collaboration with Visionaries and Voices. I'd never heard of it before, but...
The last collaboration when you were interning with him?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know this.
Yeah, it gets crazy.
Oh my gosh, tell me everything.
Like, I will. I'll tell you every single thing, and it only gets weirder. So the last project that we worked on before I had to go back to school was John was printing these cassette inserts that had Visionaries and Voices artwork. It was like all these different like design agencies and places were collaborating for this No Age show at the Cincinnati, or at the Contemporary Art Center, the CAC.
Or TAC, because I love that.
CAC.
How people say that. CAC.
Gross. anyway, so... Part of my internship duties were like delivering paper I like picking up paper, delivering it back. And this is like what I remember. I just remember I had paper in my car all the time. And
you still do.
And I still do. So anyway, like I got a tour of the like a brief tour of the studio. My first time there when I was with John, and I was like, this place is awesome. And I kept that in the back of my mind, like, when I went back to school, I always thought, like, if I move back to Cincinnati when I graduate, like, this is a place that I want to work. Because it was just, like, you know, the environment was, like, really welcoming and great. But it was just, like, the work was awesome. Like, beyond, like, regardless of, you know, the artists themselves, which are, like, their own, like, beautiful community. I was just being in an art school and being, like, quote, like, classically trained. Like, mm-hmm. you see, like, a lot of the same stuff. And then here are all these people who are making work freely without a lot of that, like, kind of bullshit that bogs you down. So anyway, I just thought it was awesome. Like, really cool work being made. And then I left. I went back to school. And
you were going back now
into my junior year.
Yeah.
So I was going to do like my second half of college back in Baltimore. And then fast forward, I do move back to Cincinnati when I graduate, look for jobs. I'm not really finding anything. You know, throughout, like, those 2 years in schools, I would see, like, positions open at V&V and be like, oh, man, but I'm over here. And I moved back, and there was a call for kind of, like, a volunteer mentorship position through the Teaching Artist Program. So I mm-hmm. mentioned that artists going through TAP, as we mm-hmm. call it, Teaching Artist Program, mm-hmm. are paired with someone from outside of V&V to kind of aid them through that process. So they have like one person who can work with them to make their lesson plans and bounce ideas off of and practice your introduction. So I applied for that. I became a mentor to Catherine Whitted, who is a phenomenal artist. I love her work. She's just a really joyful person. And so anyway, I do that while I'm mentoring Catherine. A position opens in the studio for a part-time studio coordinator, and I was lucky enough to be hired for that. And I started working. I was working like 4 days a week at Visionaries and Voices, another maybe like 3 days at the donut shop that I was working at, and then volunteering at V&V on the one day I didn't work there. And it was awesome. And then that summer, you know, the Teaching Artist Program ended, like Catherine graduated, everything was awesome. I'm still working at V&V. And I go to Thunder Sky, which is a gallery also in Northside, maybe like a mile and a half from our studio. That was, it's a visionary art gallery, and it's run by the founders of V&V.
Yeah. And Northside is a really fun neighborhood in Cincinnati.
Yes. So I went to Thunder Sky, and I'm learning like a little bit more about like the way back history of V&V, and I knew that there was a long period in the beginning where Visionaries and Voices was at the Essex Studios, which is a building that's been converted to like many floors of artist studios for all sorts of purposes. And that was actually where John Flannery, Cryptogram Inc., where I interned summer of 2013. That's where John was. That's where he had his studio at the time I interned for him. And, you know, they're describing this, I'm at Thunder Sky and they're describing the space, and I'm like, that sounds really familiar, the space that they were in Essex. And it was the same, the old V&V art studio is where John's cryptogram like print studio is where I interned, and that internship is how I learned about Visionaries and Voices. And whoa. Visionaries and Voices began where I like first heard about it.
Oh man, I'm seeing. I'm not only am I like seeing the clues, but the clues come together only as part of the whole bigger puzzle.
Yeah. So it's nuts. Like, it's like all of these little things. And like, even when I was in school, so anyway, these clues, you know, I, through high school, even through college, and even now, like, struggle trying to think about, like, who asked, like, what's next? Like, what do you want to do? And I'm just, like, trying to pick up clues. I knew that, like, you know, as I was preparing to graduate from MICA, you know, I knew I, like, didn't necessarily want to be, like, strictly a gallery artist, and, like, solely make work. I want something that's, I want to do things that are interesting and inspiring to me that make me want to continue to make work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I felt. I wanted to be able to try new things and keep growing and expanding. I was really interested in education in a non-traditional setting. So not necessarily being in a school, but really like the things that stood out to me and that helped me along the way were the outside classes that I took on my own, like workshops, things that took me out of a school setting and really brought me into a classroom where like I was in control of like what I wanted to learn, and that's why I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I saw, when I graduated and I saw the opportunity to be a mentor with Visionaries and Voices through their education department, I thought that was really fascinating. I thought, like, this is as, like, non-traditional arts education as you can get, in a way. And now I'm the education coordinator. So it's...
Now you're the man.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of, it's, like, weird. Like, it, to me, it's just kind of funny. Like, it was, like, supposed to happen this way. Mm-hmm. And, like, all of these, like, in my, you know, my professional experience out of school has really, like, all been within this organization, which doesn't honestly change very often. I feel like people have a role, and they're in that role for a while. But, yeah, I started as a mentor in the education department, worked in the studio. And working in the studio was awesome. Like, I loved that. It was truly... truly great, because like, as I mentioned, like just my like very, very brief walkthrough in 2013, it was striking to me, but just, it's something that's so much better when you like grow to know it. Like mm-hmm. it's this living, breathing organism of people who like, some of them have been making work side by side for over a decade.
Yeah. And it's clear that you really, like, the emotion is there. Yeah. Like, you really care about the space and the people. And
yeah. So it's great. Like, there are so many, like, little moments in it that are beautiful and that you're just not exposed to throughout your formal education, or in your personal life. And so my job is to try to bring that into your formal education, into your real life, and you know, give the artists the time, materials, space, encouragement,
transportation
mostly,
which for a lot of people, like, they couldn't do it if they didn't have a way to get from point A to point B.
So it's really like, my job is just to like present them and give them all the tools to success to just be themselves, because like, you know, I'm not the teacher in this scenario. I'm just like a prop. Like, I just want to be there to facilitate so that like all of the things that I see can be like as clearly pushed as possible. Mm-hmm. to just to kind of place it into your life. So like going and teaching an after school art class with elementary school age students who have maybe never been exposed to mm-hmm. someone who has a disability. Or maybe they have, but they've just never seen someone in like a place of authority. Maybe they haven't like I don't know, like there are all of these little things, and I think there are so many benefits of seeing a leader, a teacher who's sometimes different from you, and also sometimes the same as you, working with students who have disabilities, and seeing like a position of authority and knowledge and mastery from someone who is like them in ways and vastly different in many other ways. I think the largest thing that I deal with in my work is not highlighting those differences, but highlighting those similarities and convincing as much to students that like all of the things that they feel like they can't do are either just in their head.
Yep.
Or recognizing that all of our talents are, there's a spectrum, that there's there are all things that we struggle at and things that we are good at, and who's to determine like what's more valuable of those things.
Yeah, it's almost what you're doing is putting out multiple ways of seeing it and multiple ways of being, and then there's no hierarchy to that.
Yeah,
right. So beautiful hearing you describe it. When you think about the clues that you've been picking up along the way, is there a mindset or like a way of being that you feel like allows you to pick up the clues? Like the way you were describing it to me feels so aligned with, you know, other language people might use of like being in the flow or like kismet, like fated, the universe is bringing it. I'm just curious, like for you, is there a mindset or a way of being that you're holding?
Like sheer oblivion. Just not knowing and being like comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
Often, like there have been so many times where like I doubt that, especially going through school when everyone's like, all right, like you got to make it worth it. You got to get a job. You got to like, you know, when you have a discussion with someone, I feel like it's pretty natural for them to say like, so what do you want to do? And when I'm like, I don't know, but here's like things that I like, here's like an environment that I feel like I thrive in. And then I'm kind of flexible from there. I don't know. I just see like my life as being like a long thing to be lived, I hope. And that I'm not in a rush to figure out like what it is that I want to do, but that it will unfold over time. Because even like those clues that I talked about, I don't know that, well, I definitely didn't know what they were when they happened. They all kind of fell into place. Yeah. It's a gut thing.
Mm-hmm. A couple of stories that are popping up for me hearing you describe that. One is when I was probably around your age, certainly early on in my career, Colin and I were at Thanksgiving dinner with his family, and his aunt, who was then in her 40s, made the comment to us of like, "Oh, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up." And we were like, "What? What do you mean you don't know what you want to be when you grow up? You are grown up. Doesn't that mean you would know?" And it's exactly what you're describing. It was for us like this awakening of, oh, even people who are out there and are established in their career and have kids who are in high school, even they, you know, to our early 20s selves, like even they don't know what they want to be when they grow up. And it was for me one of many catalysts, one of my many clues of, it's actually not about finding the thing, but it's about this constant evolution and being open to the evolution of how things can change and evolve. And frankly, because we as people are, if we're lucky, continuing to learn and grow, and if we're committed to that and open to it, then as we grow ourselves, what we want may grow. The clues that become available to us and how we draw them to us will change. So anyway, that's one thing that when you were describing that, I was like, oh yeah, this reminds me of when Aunt Joy really opened up our mind by telling us that, you know, even she didn't know what she wanted to be when she grew up. And the other thing that you reminded me of is, and this is less of a, like a specific story that I can remember when this happened, but it's definitely a mindset that I have picked up along the way that, and this is like a little bit more on like the mystical or the magical, but I totally see this happen all the time, that when you put out into the universe what it is that you are seeking, and you don't have to name it as like, this is my vision or my goal or my plan or my objective. It's just, it could just be you're naming this thing that like, wouldn't it be cool if, if you put that out into the universe, if you wish it into the universe, if you will it into the universe, if you, whatever that verb is that feels comfortable to you, into the universe is bringing it back to you. And whether you call that the universe brings it back, your community brings it back, God brings it back, like, again, use the language that's comfortable to you. To me, it's not as much about that language so much as just being in the process of wishing it and welcoming it back. Mm-hmm. It totally happens, and I see it time and time again.
Absolutely. I'm really just counting on that. You know, because I don't know what's next or what I do from here. Like you said, I'm 23. I'll be 24 next month. And so will I be doing what I'm doing now for the next however many years? I don't know. I think naturally things will progress and evolve over time. I just feel like for me to be just in a place where I'm doing what feels right and what feels good will lead me naturally into that next thing. It's not an easy way to live by, because there's a lot of people I think that don't, that where that makes no sense to them. Where there's pressure to have a plan, to know what's next, to make actions to make that happen. And I do think that's all so important. And it's hard to identify what those actions are when you don't know what that end goal is. And so it's something that I definitely struggle with too. Like you feel like maybe you're not working hard enough, or you could have gotten further faster by knowing what that is. But just like with art, I see it's a process. And so you just got to go with it.
Well, and if the value that you're holding is speed, like there's, you know, I often see how our values influence how we move towards things. So there's definitely people that out there in the world who their value might be some variation on productivity or efficiency or speed. Like they love, and it doesn't just have to be tied to like, I need to goal planning. It might just be like, they love to solve a problem in the most like elegant way possible, which is like getting from here to there fastest. Like there could be many ways around that maze. But
and
that's
I'm,
the way
I'm
that
like
they love.
Taking a nap like on the side of that maze. And then I like got a coffee, and then I like did like, then I walked backwards for a while probably, and like,
right.
Yeah, it's the scenic route.
And there's, right. And there's a value of like the scenic route, or like there could be different words that you could use around like that value. And I kind of feel like when you have the clarity on the thing that you value and can kind of lay that out of, It's not about this goal I'm getting to. It's about honoring these sets of values, like these things that are important to me, these things that are core to who I am. And then if you're doing that, I think people tend to feel pretty good about the path they're on, whether or not that includes a clearly laid out next step related to their career.
Or even like, there's just so many people doing cool things, and now we live in a time where everyone can share every single cool thing that they're doing, and they're like, I think it's natural to compare, you know, what you're doing to what this person and that person are doing. Like, man, am I like, I'm not traveling enough, or I'm not like working hard enough in my studio, or I'm not showing my work often enough, or ever, and placing value in what other people are doing as like a competitive thing.
Yeah, it's the comparison trap.
Yeah, definitely. So I mean, it's tough because maybe those are the things that I like feel more like. Maybe I'm not doing like doing things radically enough or like boldly or I don't know, like I feel comfortable with like what I'm doing. And when you talk to other people that you think are doing cool things, they always think that what you're doing is way cooler. And there's definitely perspective there. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, I'm doing what I can with the means that I have and enjoying it and always open for mm-hmm. the next thing. And I just have to hope that carrying on like with little tokens and clues, mm-hmm. like, well, at least just give me like some perspective and reflection. I think a lot of things I just need to sit with to understand the significance of, and I feel like I'm in like a really happy place to sit and observe mm-hmm. what it is that I'm doing, and that's kind of just, that's I think a lot where the magic happens. Like you have like this hustle and bustle to get to where you are, and then you just kind of want to like, you want to look at it, make some small adjustments, stand back, get a little closer,
yeah.
make some changes, make some big changes, do some little things. Yeah, and I feel like I'm just kind of tinkering.
Yeah, beautiful. Oh, I love it. Your spirit fairy is Tinkerbell. Yes, that's what my 4-year-old would say.
Tell Henrietta that.
Yeah, she's very into fairies.
Tell her I'm Tinkerbell.
Yes, she will love that. She won't let you borrow her Tinkerbell costume, but she will love hearing that.
Well, she won't have to because I am Tinkerbell.
I want to tell you a gentleman that I worked with. He was a manager of mine early on in my career who was really excellent and really successful. Had gone to business school, spoke multiple languages. I mean, he was just this person that I really admired. And I was working in this culture that was, you know, self-identified as being full of type A people. And I fit in, in this environment. And yet also felt a little bit more like an artist than the people around me. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of, I think, the place where I felt more like a cultural misfit at times. But this particular manager, I remember him saying to me when I was... I think he was giving me a performance review, and I was talking about next steps and what I wanted in my career. This was the really goal-oriented type A mm-hmm. person in me, like, well, let me plan out, and what could come next, and what do I want? What's my vision for myself? And he said, you know, for me, I've just always tried to do a really good job at the thing that I'm doing. And then other great opportunities have emerged, and when they have, I've said yes. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Because here he is operating in the same environment that I'm in. He's gone to like one of the premier international business schools. He had a very fancy espresso maker in his office that was bright red. So I knew Ooh. He like had really had it made. Yeah. It wasn't just like a corner office, but a corner office with a bright red espresso maker.
That's it.
And, but he didn't operate on this, let me set the goal for what I want and then move towards it. Mm-hmm. It was just, let me really focus on doing a great job where I am, being there, and then saying yes when things emerge. And things always emerge for him. And he's actually someone I've gone back and had lunch with years after I left the company just to connect. And he still has that about him. So I offer that to you because there's somebody who's operating in a really traditional environment. Mm-hmm. But is totally, I think, you know, using different language, different career objective, you know, not even career objectives. That's the goal planner in me, even using language like that, a different way of being in his work. Mm-hmm. But I think you guys have a lot in common of kind of the approach that you have.
Yeah. So what you're saying is I should get an espresso maker.
Yeah. A red espresso maker in this studio is like,
that's it. And then
that's the clue.
It might be, though, because maybe that's like the elixir. Like, that's what keeps you going. That's what keeps you present in what you're doing.
That's right.
No, but I do see a lot of greatness in that. Because you can't, like, no matter what it is, like, you can't plan for anything, really. Like, time and circumstances are always going to be different. So why plan this is, there are a million people who could argue the opposite in having a plan. But to me, I just think everything is going to depend on the circumstances, and you won't know those circumstances until you know until that opportunity or that thing presents itself in that time and you have that context. So yeah, just staying present in what you do and what you're doing and giving value to what you're doing in that moment and not constantly, the most unhappy I've been are the times when I just think about every single thing, every other thing that I could be doing, or constantly looking for something else. Because you're just constantly
looking. That's
when you're
not happy. Yeah.
Because there's something exciting about trying to set out on something new, but just searching and looking, rather than honoring like the place that I'm in currently, just like gets in the way. It just belittles who you are like on that day.
Totally.
And in that time period.
Totally. Are you game if I introduce two frameworks in to get your reaction to?
To what?
To like two frameworks that are reminding me of what you're saying.
Please.
So the first is just, you know, kind of thinking in the hopes that maybe for you and also for people listening, it's helpful to have them. The first is exactly what you're describing of like, if what I'm after is like not feeling like I have enough, like it's what those other people are doing or, you know, kind of in that, whether it's the comparison trap or the framework it reminds me of is sufficiency versus scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a great book, The Soul of Money, by a woman named Lynn Twist. And I'm sure there are other people out there talking about this as well. But that's where I learned, that's where I came into this idea or framework. And it's really simple. It's just that when you operate from a place of scarcity, you're operating from a belief that there's not enough. And that means there's not enough room in my house for the, you know, for me to be able to do what I want to do. There's not enough jobs in this marketplace for me to get the job I want. There's not enough. And there's not enough men in this world that I'm going to find the right partner. Like it plays out in like in any arena. But if you're operating from there's not enough, your behavior shows up accordingly. So as an entrepreneur, if I'm operating from scarcity, I don't want to share a good idea with somebody else because I think they might steal it. And now I'm not saying you don't want to be savvy and think through things, but that mindset is going to pervade usually in a way that starts to deteriorate things for you.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, that you have sufficiency and it's just the exact opposite. Really simple. You're operating from a place that there is enough. And if there's enough food, there's enough nature, there's enough people, there's enough jobs, there's enough love, there's enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And that you yourself are enough.
Like, yeah.
That like, whether you are working your dream job or not your dream job, I don't want to insult anyone's like little thing. But to me, like when I graduated from MICA and could only find a job at a bakery putting donuts in a bag, I felt like I was not like meeting these expectations that, you know, my diploma or my just, you know, my inner dialogue had set up for myself, that I wasn't, that because I'm not doing whatever, I still didn't know what I wanted to do or what I should be doing. But because I wasn't doing that, then I was not enough. But really, I'm the same person, whether I am in this job or that job. But that just being confident and surrounding yourself with people who validate that, that's like most important, that you, no matter what, are like the same person and are like still kick ass and amazing and talented.
That's right. And that actually is a really good dovetail into this. I've never thought of these as interconnected frameworks, but now I'm kind of seeing it that way, talking with you about it. But the other thing is, you know, I talk a core part of me is thinking about storytelling, and this is probably the same reason that I felt like, of course it made sense to be an English major and then go out into the world. Like, you need to understand stories.
Yeah.
And this is how you can create dialogue with people and begin to make connections and understand yourself in a different way. Anyway, but the storytelling continues to show up in my work, and a piece that I really value about it is that we can always go back and revise our stories.
Yeah.
So it's an, like, our past, right? These stories where we're coming from aren't actually stagnant mm-hmm. when you think of it that way. And the framework that I'm seeing is connected to this sufficiency scarcity is that in your story, you're always the hero of your story, and you can be a hero in victory, which I think of in my own language of, like, you at your best, mm-hmm. you in a place of strength, or you can be a hero in retreat, right? Or in plain speak, you running away from things, you sticking your head in the stand,
yeah,
and you feeling not at your best, you feeling weak. And I think in a lot of ways, when we operate from sufficiency, even though we might not have a lot, mm-hmm. right? We might not have a ton of money. We might not have a furniture in our apartment. We might, you know, whatever it is. We might feel like we're, like, really eating a lot of ramen.
Yeah.
But the sufficiency is you at your best. It's your hero in victory. Mm-hmm. And when we get into that scarcity mindset, I really feel like that connects us back to that hero in retreat. Mm-hmm. And you can be doing the exact same thing, putting donuts in a bag. And if you do it from coming at your best, you show up, you feel you, it is a different thing than you actually doing the exact same physical motions when you're doing it from that hero in retreat.
Yeah. And that's so true. I absolutely believe that. And I feel like we get these conditions because people in storytelling perpetuate them at the, like, a hero and victory, like them at their best. And what they don't tell you is that when you graduate from school, you're probably going to work some shitty job for a period of time. And that's part of the process. When you, like, build up these expectations, like, of these heroes, your heroes, you expect to become them overnight, but really every person has some lapse or time. But, like, knowing that, like, you are still that person, you are just still growing and becoming that.
Yeah. And I would even push further, but push back if this doesn't feel off, because I don't want to make it seem like I'm like, but everything's great, and, like, make it all feel optimistic. But I think if you think of it as a shitty job, mm-hmm. then that in some ways is a hero in retreat. And that's how I'm feeling about it. But you push back if you disagree. But if you think of it as you might not be doing the platonic ideal job that you're envisioning for yourself, mm-hmm. or like what your school is saying, like, you must go off and do these things or whatever it is. But if you can appreciate that job for what it is in that moment, which is it's giving you the money you need to pay the rent, to give you the space and not take up mental energy, like, whatever,
yeah.
but you, like, appreciate that this, that thing, even though it's not maybe the end game or
yeah.
it's not,
let
but
it
appreciate
serve
it for
you.
What it is. Yeah.
yeah. Let it serve you.
Yeah.
Like, let it, like, use it, like, whatever
yeah.
it is, like, spin it to be what you want. Like, while I was, like, putting donuts in a bag, I was like, this is an opportunity for me to, like, brush up on some descriptive skills. Like, you know, it's not that far off from art. All I'm doing is describing what I see in front of me to another person and, seeing if they'll buy it.
yeah.
And, you know, little things like that. And, you know, like, if you want to, I don't want it to seem like I'm just like, ugh, going to college, man, put all this pressure that you need to, like, do this, that, and that. Like, I've always felt like, you know, it's a slow burn. It'll come together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of pushback when you feel yourself like things aren't moving fast enough to, like, when you know that you've got, like, a lot to offer or give, but you just don't know how yet. Mm-hmm. But you can't like do everything every single day. Like in your biography at the end of your life, it's not gonna, like, there's going to be dull moments and happy moments and scary moments and times when you felt like you were everything and times when you felt like you were nothing. And it's like the most common thing that you could have. So yeah, just kind of honoring the place that you're in while you're in it.
Wow. That is a lot of insight to drop, my beautiful sister. And I feel like that's a good place for us to kind of move towards our close. As you know, one of the things that motivates me in my work is to help people and empower them to lead a well-designed life, whatever that looks like to them. Mm-hmm. So I am curious for you, what does it look like to lead a well-designed life?
To lead a well-designed life. I think, to me, leading a well-designed life are when your passions and your routines find a way to intersect. Like, when you are doing, like, what you wish you were doing is what you have to do. Like, that's where, like, the good stuff happens. Like, I was just talking with my coworker, my education partner, Casey, today. She's like, man, we'd have to be offered, like, a lot of money to be, like, doing something that we would want to do less. Like, and even then, like, there, like, it would be, every day I get to talk to interesting people and look at beautiful artwork and make things and communicate with peers that are really awesome, and I get to go out into the community and speak about like what I care about and help others do the same. And so to align your passions with your routines, I think is huge, because then everything else just becomes like growing and learning, like leaving the rest to be experiments. Mm-hmm. So I know, like, when I come home from work, I've also accomplished something for myself. And that leaves the rest of my day, evening, life for tinkering and for looking for more clues and experimenting.
Well said. Tell listeners where they can find out more about you, Julia.
You can follow me on Instagram and be jealous of my life and wish that you were doing the things that I was doing.
Wait a minute.
Just kidding. My Instagram is J-U Lipovsky, so J-U-L-I-P-O-V-S-K-Y. I have a website, julialipovsky.com, and you can find me in Cincinnati on the street. I have glasses and a blonde streak in my hair. And if you see someone who matches this description, just stop them.
Awesome. I'll make sure to link to all of those places where they can find you, and Visionaries and Voices, and all the things that we've talked about today, some of the artists and things like that, in the show notes. Thanks for doing this. This was fun.
Yeah.
High five, sister.
You should start making buttons that say, I survived an interview with Sharon Lipovsky.
Wait a minute. And scene.
So that's a wrap for today's interview. Isn't Julia just lovely? Before signing off, I wanted to give you a heads up on where you can go to learn more about Julia and other upcoming interviews. For show notes, including information on how to follow Julia on Instagram, to check out some of her Clades necklaces, and links to the many cool organizations referenced today, you can head over to pointroadstudios.com/podcast. While you are on the site, look for the green subscribe button to stay up to date on our upcoming interviews and all of the content aimed at spreading the design yourself spirit. We would love to have you join us. As always, if you like what you heard on today's show, please help me spread the word. Two simple ways to do that. One, tell your friends about the show. Two, head over to Apple Music and leave the show a written review. I read all of those reviews, take your feedback to heart, so thank you for doing that.
A special thank you to Colin Phillips, who does all of the audio engineering to make the show sound great each week, to the Dismemberment Plan, who kindly agreed to let me use their song Following Through for my intro and outro music, and to John Flannery for the cover art. And of course, a giant thank you to all of you for listening. The show just would not exist without your support. I am wishing each of you a beautiful week. And until next time, remember, there is nothing stopping you. So go on ahead and get after whatever it is that you really want.